How do you get the best feedback? Because what I've seen a lot of people do is say, hey, I built this page. It's for sellers or it's for buyers. It's when they do these three things. And when you click here, this happens. Let me walk you through it. So they're almost steering you, right? So can you give some guidance on when someone builds something, what is the best way for them to actually put it in front of somebody and ask for that feedback?
Real estate touches every one of our lives, yet it is the last major industry to undergo a much needed digital transformation. That's why the brightest minds, backed by the biggest investors, are on this mythical quest to build one app to rule them all. I'm Sharon Srivatsa, and he is Pritesh Damani, and we're breaking down the quest for real estate's holy grail. Welcome to the Super App Podcast.
Today we have a special in-studio episode today because Pritesh and I are together on the road, so we thought we would do a special episode for you. And this entire episode is based on one thing, and it is success loves speed. Success loves speed because when we have an idea that on something that we want to do, maybe if you're a real estate agent and you want to put a marketing piece out, when you are, if you're a mortgage broker and you have a product that you want to do something with, or as Pritesh and I, and we build something from a technology perspective, thinking about it for months is one thing, but actually seeing it live, touching it is really, really powerful. So today we're going to break down for you how you can actually get success quickly by showing the Lego blocks that you can build to get things faster. So Pritesh, on when we, maybe take us to this idea. When we think about an idea, when you start to explore it with the team, where's the first place you go? Like, how do you get traction on getting an idea out of our head and doing something with it quickly?
Well, it's a great question, right? So first step towards an idea is, you know, who's your target audience? Mm-hmm. Who's going to use it? And in our case, most of the times it's agents, but sometimes it's internal staff, right?
Right.
And then it's very easy to get carried away. What I mean by that is like everybody wants to build the final Amazon.com, right? But not just like say, okay, we're just going to sell books.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So internally, we talk about this concept of MVP, but I talk about the concept of like, I made this word up, minimum acceptable product. Because for a mature company, like MVPs don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't just say, okay, this barely works.
Yeah.
Let me just launch it to a audience that relies on our business to make money. Like right. Their livelihood relies on you, right?
Right?
So what we talk about internally, we say minimum acceptable product, which is it works, but it doesn't have everything. But it does what it's supposed to do perfectly.
Right.
Right. So we internally started talking about minimal acceptable product. And then you say, okay, what's the minimal acceptable product for this feature? We just launched that. The advantage of doing that is, first, you go to market really fast.
Right.
Two is you can prove your hypothesis, right? Like, just like, hey, people will actually use this.
Right.
Sometimes people will pay for this, right? That kind of thing. And three is, oftentimes or not, once you launch it, you find problems.
Of course.
Right. So we call it the big bang. Like you don't want to have a big bang because a big bang almost always fails. So
yeah. You
could sit on something and say, I'm going to build this perfect product. It's going to take 3 years. And you launch it and you will find out that almost inevitably there's something wrong.
Well, and we've spent our requirements would have changed over that time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And oftentimes you can't make decisions in a basement, right? So you want to go to market. The reason is because your customers tell you what they really want. So your minimal acceptable product almost is a minimal acceptable product for you as a product person. But when you go to market, your customers start telling you what they really want.
Right.
But it's a starting point. So the less you do and go to market, the more likely you're going to have an acceptable outcome a year after that or 6 months after that, depending on like, you know, how big the feature is.
So I have a lot of questions. So the first question is, no matter what we're building, at least on the technology side, do you follow the same process? Do you follow the same process of kind of designing and defining what the requirements are, designing and defining acceptance criteria, doing the mock-ups, battle testing that, you know, making sure that, you know, making sure everyone signs off on UI and visuals, then build the code. Is the process the same every single time?
Almost always. So, you know, sometimes it's API, so there's no design, right?
Right.
But the process is almost the same. The challenge is as your team grows, you're not involved in every conversation, and people in your team need to have the empowerment and the and the affordability of making those decisions on their own.
Right.
Right. And going to market and failing. And I think a lot of people are just afraid of going to market and failing. What they don't realize, like in my opinion, what most product people don't realize is that no matter how hard they work, they're going to fail the first attempt.
Yeah. Well, this is really interesting to me because I'm thinking about a different analogy. So if you take a non-product situation, right? So let's say there's a real estate agent thinking about a marketing piece. The learning that I have is it's the same process for every marketing piece. Hey, we designed the idea of like what we want to get accomplished. Cool. What are we actually going to do to get there? What is the fastest possible way we can test this idea? And let's test it while we build the next version of it. And I think that a lot of times, I'll tell you the thing that I've been thinking a lot about. And is this idea of random acts of kindness, right? And let me explain what I mean by that. So we in society have accepted this idea that random acts of kindness is a positive thing. But if you take this idea of random acts of kindness and you move it to either product or marketing or what a real estate agent does, I'll take a real estate agent example. There is now random acts of marketing, right? Random acts of marketing are bad, right? It's not built in one cohesive vision. There's no way to like think about, hey, if I do these three things and I'll do that. That's why when real estate agents, mortgage brokers, consumers, they go to like a random conference and in the conference, someone has an idea. Every single person on Instagram says the same exact phrase, right? And you have these random acts of marketing. And so everyone is so tied to the bells and whistles of like this front end marketing. There's no cohesive strategy on the back end, right? And so, so my question for you is, when you get an idea and you follow the same process to develop it and see it through, how much of the time is spent saying, hey, should we even be building this?
Yeah, I think it's spent with a different team. So in my scenario, like what would end up happening? Like, you know, the first discussion is, hey, why are we building this? And the why are we building this is typically not with the internal team. Typically, it's with the external team, like the business team, who comes with the problem in the first place, saying, hey, this happened in the industry. We need to have a product that does something along these lines, right? The step after that is something we talked about in our previous podcast, which was setting up the KPIs. What does success look like, right? And then you translate success into revenues and you say, this is how much potential revenue is attached to this feature, if it is. And then we ask ourselves, is this enough?
Yeah.
Right? Because sometimes you spend $200,000 to make like $10,000 a month, like it makes no sense, right?
Yeah.
So then you say, is this enough? And then after that, you say, what's the least amount of work I can do to get there?
Yeah.
So that we can test this out.
Yeah. Like an effort to result ratio, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And so let me ask you this. If you take away your product hat, let's do a non-product example. Not everything that is done either on a consumer side, mortgage side, agent side could have a revenue impact. Sometimes it's just a, hey, I'm going to do this to build brand, et cetera. Do you believe that if I, Sharon, the real estate agent, am going to do something, before I do it, I should say, I'm doing this to achieve X. And after it's launched, I need to be very honest with myself about it, right? Like I call it the be honest when you stand on the scales in the morning. Like you got to stand on the scale in the morning. You got to read that what the weight is and you got to do whatever. You're like, if you're up, then you're going to eat a salad that day. If you're down, then you're okay, right? So I think a lot of product-wise and non-product-wise, a lot of folks romanticize with this idea that they have. So there's a lot of idea romance as opposed to the value of the product. And by the way, it happens to us too, right?
Yeah.
And how do we get out of that?
I think like I love the analogy of standing on the scale. It's kind of the same thing, right? Like we have to ask ourselves, is this the best thing for our customers? And is this the best thing for us in that order, almost in that order, right? Like I heard this somewhere. I can't quote who said it, but it said, solve the problem that nobody else wants to solve, right? Because it's easy to solve the problem that everybody wants to solve because those are the easy problems.
Yeah.
But if you find the problem that nobody else wants to solve and you're the ones who solve it, you've just created a niche.
Yeah.
You've created like a moat, right? Like maybe another inch on top of your moat. So, and because nobody else wants to solve these problems, they must be hard problems.
Right. So how do, so this brings me to on this main theme. When you have a hard problem, how do you do it with speed? Is it chunking it up? Is it breaking it down? Like, what is that? How do you think about that?
Yeah, I think chunking it up might be the obvious solution. However, when you're looking at a problem and you're saying, okay, I want outcome B, you have to analyze and see, is the chunk one, or if you chunk it up into 10 pieces, is the first chunk going to get you outcome B? If not, then you're not going to measure at the end of launching that chunk one, you're not going to really effectively know if it's working or not.
Correct.
So it's almost like, what's the smallest sliver of the cake that gets you to the middle of the cake, right? Or like in the watermelon, the sweetest part is in the center. Like, right. What's the smallest cut that you can get to the center and eat the sweetest part, right?
Right.
So I feel like maybe a horizontal sliver where you say, what's the happiest path from point A to point B, which is the easiest path to go down, and it will only do one thing. But if that one customer that ends up using that feature at one time and lands on that happy path, we get to know if it works or not. That type tests your hypothesis.
Yeah. Right?
So and then feedback. You have to be, as a product person, I always like ask our team to be careful with feedback. Because feedback is oftentimes feature requests.
Give me an example.
So if you take a minimum acceptable product,
right,
you know you cut corners.
Right.
You know,
right,
you didn't build a bunch of stuff that needed to be built.
Right.
Right. So what's the feedback going to be like?
Hey,
I want that yeah, you just didn't build.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't launch.
Correct.
What you have.
Correct.
That just means you put it on the list of things you got to build.
Yeah.
The feedback you're looking for is why what you have is not good.
Right.
And it cannot be a feature request. And that's the key, is to truly, when you're interviewing someone, you cannot spoon feed them a response. However, when they're giving you feedback, you ask yourself, is this a rejection of what I have? Or is this, hey, give me this other feature that's not in your current feature set?
Yeah. That takes skill to like discern what that is.
It takes skill, and like it really takes, I think it takes years and years of rejection to not take it personally.
Yeah.
Because every product manager that I know of goes defensive out of the gate, saying, well, I built, it took me months to build this thing. And in some portion of their heart somewhere, they know that, you know, they can't handle any kind of rejection on this.
Yeah.
Right. Because they poured their heart and soul into it.
So this brings me to something very interesting that you're sharing. So internally, we have built a pretty evangelistic group that is tied to you on ideas, feedback, etc. So a couple things about this group. One, there is a code of conduct in this group, because you're like, hey, if you're in here, you're going to do X, Y, Z. So everyone in there is culturally aligned with the product, with giving feedback, with the development cycles, etc. And the second is, when we build something, that group looks at it first in a lot of ways. And they've seen so much iteration that they're able to be in the flow and give feedback, right? So my question is, how important is a test group for speed?
It's extremely important. I think you should have your loyal evangelist. Evangelists do two things. One is they help you with the signal-to-noise ratio on your broader customer. So when there's a lot of negative comments or negative reception to some feature, there's some defense built into it. So at least you can control the noise. Because oftentimes, like, only 1% of the people complain, right? Like yesterday, for example, I'll give you an example. Somebody who had like feedback on our signature product.
Yeah, right? I saw it.
And the feedback is right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That person in that moment is frustrated and writes that feedback, right? Which is, in my mind, a feature request. Right? It's an important feature request, but it's a feature request.
Right.
But how do I not personally feel bad about it? So what I do is I go to the dashboard and I say, how many documents were signed yesterday? The answer is 1,400. So something has got to be working if we got 1,400 documents signed yesterday.
Mm-hmm. That's really powerful that, you know, I think that's, I guess this is not just a product lesson, but it's also a life lesson, right? It's, you have a rubric for evaluating the feedback that you're getting in some way. So if someone told me, hey, I don't like your tone, Well, I don't know if that's a feature request, meaning, oh, when I'm internal, maybe I'm when I'm with her, I need a lower tone because maybe she has sensitive ears or whatever, right? But that's really, because I think this is a, there's both the personal growth thing, and I think the key there is, if you are asking for feedback, you need to have some rubric for receiving that feedback. Otherwise, you may end up taking it personally.
Yes. The amount of times people ask for feedback and not actually want it is incredible. In personal life, I've found this many times.
But do you think the reason they're asking for the feedback is to check the box that they asked for the feedback? Or do you think they're asking for the feedback without having a rubric for knowing how to accept the feedback that's coming?
I can tell you with a fair degree of certainty, on the product side, the answer is that they are asking for feedback with an expectation that it's amazing.
They want validation.
They want validation.
Got it.
But in personal life, most of the times I feel that, you know, when people ask for feedback, they're hoping for some kind of empathy and validation.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And when you, and only the truest of your close network can actually handle the real feedback.
Right.
Because they're not expecting you to, like, be honest.
Yeah. But so let's say this happens. We go through this iteration cycle. You show it to a product group. It's not received well. Like, they are confused. They don't know what to do next. What happens then? Is that a go back to the drawing board? Like, how do you think about that?
Well, it could be going back to the drawing board. Hopefully it's not that bad. Most of the times, it's more along the lines of, hey, this, you know, I didn't understand this English sentence, or I didn't understand the screen, or I didn't understand the button, or I didn't understand. And you can typically solve it by truly understanding what they're trying to do. Like, recently we started like beta testing on a new feature, and I found somebody instructed them how to use a feature, and I'm like, that's the whole point.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. Yeah. Just say, go find it.
Yeah.
And then you watch. And then every question is feedback.
Mm.
Every question is feedback. Where is this? That's feedback. They couldn't find it.
Mm.
Right? Oh, do I have to create a folder before doing this? That's feedback.
Mm.
Document it. Put an eye icon. Something. Right? The more you tell them, the less you're going to learn. So you almost have to, like, throw them in there and say, give them a high-level concept. You can now do this and let them do it. I used to watch them do it.
Yeah.
I used to record screens.
Yeah.
And then watch screens, hours and hours of screen recording, yeah, to, like, see where the
mouse is going. Yeah.
Right. But again, it's sometimes, like, you get caught into go fast and, you know, speedy delivery versus, okay, do I watch every mouse recording? So, you know, you want to go from point A to point B as quickly as possible, but when you're at B, you want to take that feedback really seriously.
So let's do a non-product thing on this. So I go to an event, I get a marketing piece, and I'm like, I see a marketing piece on stage, I'm inspired, I build a marketing piece, and I have my mastermind group. Talk me through this idea. Would I take this marketing piece and say, hey guys, I built this piece, what do you think? Without giving any context, or should I give them context? How do you get the best feedback? Because I think what I've seen a lot of people do is say, hey, I built this page. It's for sellers, or it's for buyers. It's when they do these three things. And when you click here, this happens. Let me walk you through it. So they're almost steering you, right? So can you give some guidance on when someone builds something, what is the best way for them to actually put it in front of somebody and ask for that feedback?
So it's a great question. I would build it. And then I would, before I build it, I define my target audience, right? So say this thing is for buyers, this thing is for sellers, this thing is for renters, right? Yeah. Whatever. So if you build something and you know your target audience, first, you only show it to that target audience.
Mm.
You're going to get, again, feedback. That's feature requests. It's not, because if you build something for buyers and you show it to people who are not buying, the feedback you're going to get is going to be the last known reference that they had about something, right?
Right.
A person actively buying today has different needs, and they are more up to speed on what's available in the market versus someone who was buying 2 years ago.
Totally.
Right. So I would really be very careful about who I ask for feedback. Well, once you do ask for feedback, you don't guide them. You say, hey, if I build something for buyers and if I know that person is actively buying, I would just send them a link on the phone and say, what do you think? That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this brings me to the next question on, there's probably a lot of folks that are listening are thinking about yeah, I have this idea for a startup. Sometimes they build a mock demo to show an investor. But then when they show something to an investor, and you know how investors are, like they, even we know it, they rip it up, right?
Yeah.
How do you pre-frame something for an investor? Is that different than how you would pre-frame it for your target audience?
Yeah, investors are, it's a completely different ballgame, right? So the investors, if you see, what's their outcome?
Yeah, they want to see if there is viability in this in some way.
Yeah, if they want to see if their money is going to go.
Hey, this is Sharon. If you sell real estate, I have a cool gift for you. I packaged up my 7 best money-making trainings for real estate agents called the Top Agent Power Pack. It's raw and real, and it's 100% free as our gift to you. Just go to topagentpowerpack.com and grab it right now for free. That's topagentpowerpack.com.